I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We explore the cultural and physical development of life in the modern city through the lens of history and the context of community. Today's show, The Story of Race, with author Gary Pomerantz. Brought to you by Perkins & Will and Hirsch Bednar Associates. Journalist and nonfiction author Gary Pomerantz conducted over 500 interviews to pen Where Peachtree Meets Sweet Auburn, a New York Times notable exploring the history of two Atlantas, black and white. The book, a must-read for any lover of history, traverses the intersection of well-heeled Peachtree Street and Auburn Avenue, the birthplace of the civil rights movement that was, at one time, black America's premier example of enterprise, culture, and achievement. Pomerantz provides captivating prose and political provenance in sharing the saga of race and family of two legendary lineages. The Allens were slave owners, the Dobbses, slaves. From these bloodlines comes the legacy of Ivan Allen Jr. and Maynard Jackson Jr., two of the most important mayors the South has ever seen. Why is this important now? As Auburn Avenue experiences a renaissance, many are concerned about the prospect of history lost. We can't know where we are if we don't know where we've been. Let's get Gary on the phone.
Hi, this is Gary.
Gary, Gene Kansas with Sidewalk Radio. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Gene. How you doing?
I'm thrilled that you're on with us today.
Well, I'm glad to be on with you. It's, you know, I've been away from Atlanta for quite some time. Even so, Atlanta, you know, remains very much in my heart.
I am curious, you know, why tell this story?
What drew me to the story of Peachtree and Auburn was the story of race. I had been a history major at Berkeley. I was fortunate to have two professors who really caught a spark with me, both of them teaching the black experience in this country, Leon Litwack, a Pulitzer Prize winner, and Larry Levine. And when I came to Atlanta, I saw all the symbols. You know, you saw the statues of Tom Watson and Gene Talmadge, and then just a short distance away, the crypt of Martin Luther King Jr. And that epitaph, "Free at Last." And for me, it resonated profoundly. You know, the black-white dynamic played out in dramatic terms: civil war, civil rights, and everything in between. You know, what makes Atlanta Atlanta? And I started with the idea of Peachtree and Auburn as great symbols for dreamers in the South, white and black, the yellow brick roads, if you will. Then I thought, well, you know, in the South, you are who your family is. If I were to try to put families to those two famous boulevards, what families would they be? And I considered quite a few different families, but I was looking for families who produced multiple generations of civic contributions and came up with the Ivan Allens and Maynard Jackson's maternal line, the Dobbs family, John Wesley Dobbs being the former so-called mayor of Sweet Auburn and his grandson Maynard Jackson, the South's first African-American mayor.
What was it about their lineage that made them who they are?
Well, they're both of the South, for one thing. You know, Maynard Jackson I traced to an $800 field hand slave in Cobb County who was owned by a farmer named Josiah Dobbs. Ivan Allen Jr. I traced to a Confederate cavalryman who was in northeast Tennessee near Greenville, Ernest Allen. And so, for me, the story was, as I say, about race. Atlanta historically is the black-white dynamic. And so both of these men were shaped by their parents and their grandparents, and as we all are. And so I found myself looking at, you know, lawsuits that had been filed in 1831 by Allen ancestors over the dispensation of family slaves. And I'm in this courthouse in Greenville, Tennessee, unfolding these pages, and it looked like they'd been written the day before.
It sounds a lot like you were putting together a puzzle. Did that make it easier or more difficult?
Well, it made it fantastic. There were times when I was advised by archivists at the Georgia State Archives and other places, just stop, Gary. Don't go any further. You're not going to find what you're looking for. It's the proverbial needle in the haystack. Then I would keep on pushing ahead like a fool, and I'd find the needle. It was about one victory for every 10,000 defeats.
When you were writing the book, and you, I would imagine, spent time, well, you certainly spent time on Peachtree because you can't help it. I'm guessing you also spent time on Auburn Avenue. And you saw the condition that they were in during those days, but you knew its history. Which Auburn, which Peachtree were you seeing?
First, when I see them, I see them for the symbolism, right? I mean, Peachtree and Auburn represented parallel universes. They were the yellow brick roads for dreamers in the South. Peachtree was historically Atlanta's most celebrated thoroughfare. It's where the old vine Southern families, who were white and wealthy, lived in their fine homes. And Auburn Avenue was never the equal of Peachtree in terms of aesthetics. I mean, to the eye, Auburn didn't have the glamour or the grandeur. Peachtree went on for miles and miles, you know, from downtown into Midtown and then into Buckhead, whereas Auburn Avenue stretched for only about a mile and a half. But to African Americans across the South, Auburn Avenue's symbolism was rich and profound. It was that street of dreams. Auburn becomes the commercial and spiritual hub of Black Atlanta, a street that in the 1920s and 30s and 40s filled with the offices of Black doctors and lawyers. It featured those impressive Reconstruction-era churches and the nation's first Black daily newspaper. It was a street of proud racemen and voter registration prophets. And remember, too, Auburn Avenue housed Dr. King's headquarters for the Civil Rights Movement, right there in the Oddfellows Building.
Listening to an interview with Gary Pomerantz, author of Where Peachtree Meets Sweet Auburn. Gary, in the history of Atlanta, what was our defining hour?
To me, Atlanta's defining hour was that 1961 mayor's race between Ivan Allen Jr. and Lester Maddox. That's when the city decided its path. If Lester Maddox had defeated Ivan Allen Jr. in the 1961 mayor's race, Atlanta wouldn't have hosted the Olympics in 1996. If Lester Maddox, who with his customers at the Pickrick restaurant once chased Black Atlantans away with axe handles, and who as governor in 1968 on the day of the King funeral went out to the flagpole at the State House and raised that flag from half staff to the top of the pole and then went back inside where he was being protected by more than 150 Georgia State troopers, daring any of the Black mourners who had come to the funeral that if they stormed the Capitol, they would, as he said, meet their makers. If that man, Lester Maddox, with that type of thinking, had won the 1961 mayor's race, the progress of modern Atlanta would not have ended, but surely it would have been delayed. And let's not forget, too, that in that 1961 mayor's race, Lester Maddox, calling for ardent segregation, won the white vote. Of the more than 20,000 votes cast in that runoff by Black Atlantans, Ivan Allen Jr. won all but 237, and the likelihood was that the Black Atlantans who voted for Maddox had mistakenly pulled the wrong lever in the voting booth. Ivan Allen Jr. becomes the human bridge from the Old South to the new in Atlanta. You know the story. He'd been raised in elite Atlanta, the Piedmont Driving Club, the Capital City Club, and he grew up thinking segregation appropriate. But in 1963, he became boldly the only elected Southern official to testify for President Kennedy's Public Accommodations Bill, which was a precursor to the 64 Civil Rights Act. Some would suggest to you that Ivan Allen Jr.'s transformation on the race issue was purely political. But I would suggest another possibility, that beginning in 1960, Ivan Allen Jr., for the first time in his privileged life, began to experience African Americans in Atlanta as something other than butlers and chauffeurs and yardmen and maids.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, he began to know the likes of Benjamin Mays, the president of Morehouse, and the banker L.D. Milton, and the Reverend Borders, and the publisher C.A. Scott, and Daddy King, and MLK Jr. Intellectually, these men were his equal and more, and Ivan Allen Jr. knew that. And so he began to change, I think, on a more human, more compassionate level. And some would say that it's not possible to change so dramatically on the race issue, but I disagree.
Yeah, well,
to deny that is to deny the human capacity for change.
Yeah, and as far as the African-American contingent goes, I think you rightly define that there are two Atlantas.
The story of Atlanta is full of nuance, and it's full of small moments that resonate. And you know, a perfect moment would be on Auburn Avenue in April of 1948, when Atlanta finally hired its first black police officers. You know, Atlanta claims to be first in all things, but it wasn't first in this regard either. Even Savannah had already hired African-American policemen. April of 48, we're talking. And Bill Hartsfield was like a municipal magician. Hartsfield had told John Wesley Dobbs and A.T. Walden and C.A. Scott and other African-Americans who were interested in getting Atlanta's first African-American policeman, if you get 10,000 registered black voters, I'll get you your policeman. Well, when more than 10,000 black Atlantans registered to vote, Hartsfield delivered on his promise in the spring of 1948, and a huge crowd of black Atlantans stood outside the Butler Street YMCA, where the first black officers emerged in their new blue uniforms. And they came out of the YMCA because the police chief, Jenkins, didn't think white officers were quite ready to have black officers changing into and out of their uniforms right beside them. Maynard Jackson was only 10 years old on that day, and he was standing in the crowd beside his grandfather, John Wesley Dobbs, who was the Grand Master of the Prince Hall Masons of Georgia. The Grand, they called him. Dobbs was a remarkable orator. Up and down Auburn Avenue, he would give talks in which he would quote Francis Bacon and Shakespeare and Henry Grady and Du Bois, sometimes all in the same sentence. And on this day, there's Maynard Jackson at the age of 10 looking up at his grandfather, the Grand, and he sees his eyes wide and tearing up. And he hears John Wesley Dobbs say, all but shouting over the crowd, "Great God Almighty, look at those black boys in those uniforms." 66 years later, this might seem only a small moment. But to Dobbs, it was not. It was a revelation. It was a liberation. It was emancipation. Dobbs said it was the ballot that had made this possible. The ballot, you know, was the true road to freedom for African Americans in Atlanta and across the South, Dobbs said. And it's no surprise that Maynard Jackson, his grandson, would find his way into politics, or that he would become a refined orator himself, or that he would become, 25 years later, the first black mayor in the American South.
I'd like to thank my guest today, Gary Pomerantz. Of course, we'd also like to thank our sponsors, Perkins & Will and Hirsch Bednar Associates. Thank you all so much for listening. See you next month.